Chapter 18.
There are many stories and myths about the Chiss. Some are accurate. Others have been eroded by the twin forces of distance and time. But one fact always remained constant. The Chiss must be approached from a position of strength and respect. One must have strength, for the Chiss will deal only with those capable of keeping their promises. One must have respect, for the Chiss must believe that those promises will be kept. There will be many cultural differences, and a warrior dealing with the Chiss must be wary of them. But never make the mistake of believing forbearance equates to acceptance, or that all positions are equally valid. There are things in the universe that are simply and purely evil. A warrior does not seek to understand them or to compromise with them. He seeks only to obliterate them.
There were three open-topped landspeeders worth, 9 men and 3 women in all. Eli and Thrawn watched through the meeting house doorway as the intruders drove carefully into the lane of damaged plants, forcing their way over through the damaged stalks. One at a time, the vehicles stopped, spacing themselves along the corridor at 20-meter intervals. The raiders climbed out, scattered along the lane, and got to work. Eli had hoped that all 3 of the conspirators Thrawn had identified earlier at the meeting would be present. It would certainly make it easier to file charges if they were caught in the act. But only the nervous one, Tanu, was present. Still, the fact that the landspeeders had driven straight into the field, apparently not caring that they were leaving visible damage on the remaining stalks, indicated that Thrawn had been correct in his conclusion that this would be the last raid for a while. The further implication was that everyone who wasn't working the diversionary raids was probably here. And with Thrawn's stormtroopers backing up the Aiffs, the raiders weren't going to have the quick and easy smash and run they were expecting. In fact, there was a good chance the whole bunch of them would end up captured. If Eli and Thrawn could take this group as well, the Imperials might indeed roll up the whole conspiracy tonight. There would certainly be no lack of evidence. Each of the raiders had 2 long cylindrical bags attached to his or her waist, about 15 centimeters in diameter, trailing on the ground. They walked steadily along their assigned sections of the ore vein, digging into the soil with small trowels and shoveling their prizes into the bags.
Interesting, Thrawn murmured. Tanu isn't digging.
Eli focused his electrobinoculars. Thrawn was right. Tanu was going back and forth among the diggers, testing the material they were digging up with a handheld sensor.
Checking the quality of ore, he suggested.
Perhaps,
Thrawn said, his voice thoughtful.
Locate his full record. I want a list of his areas of knowledge and expertise.
Yes, sir.
Eli lowered his electrobinoculars and pulled out his data pad. They'd already looked at the summary profiles of the 3 known conspirators, which had listed Tanu as a crop geneticist. The record came up, and Eli skimmed it. He frowned as something caught his eye. His secondary schooling was in organic chemistry.
Was he ever arrested or charged with a crime?
Nothing about that here, Eli said.
A thought struck him, and he keyed a new search. No arrests for Tanu himself, but his older brother was arrested for... He trailed off, his throat tightening as he read the rest of the entry.
His older brother was arrested for possession of spice, he said. Specifically a rare variety called Skarn, that forms under grain fields.
Thrawn turned his glowing red eyes toward him.
Grain fields such as this one?
Yes, Eli said,
a taste of bile in the back of his mouth. Spice, in any of its dozens of varieties, was a plague on the galaxy, a horribly addicting drug that its victims would lie, steal, assault,
and murder for. This stuff is more a pre-spice compound, actually. It looks like you have to do some refining and chemical manipulation to make it full-fledged Skarn.
Show me the method.
Eli pulled up the file and handed over his datapad.
For a few minutes, Thrawn read in silence.
Then he handed back the datapad and pulled out his comlink.
This is Commander Thrawn, he said softly. Are the shuttles and stormtroopers I ordered ready to fly? Good. Send them to this location for prisoner retrieval. Also add Lieutenant Gim to the TIE escort. Launch when ready.
He got an acknowledgement and returned the comlink to his belt.
Eli did a quick run through the numbers.
Normally, prep and travel time would mean the shuttles would show up in 40 minutes. Thrawn's foresight in having them ready to go should cut that in half. How many stormtroopers are coming?
20,
Thrawn said.
I didn't know how large the conspiracy was when I gave the orders.
Better to err on the side of caution,
Eli agreed. And 20 stormtroopers was erring well on the side of caution.
Is Lieutenant Gim one of the new TIE pilots?
Yes, Thrawn said. He's also the best we currently have.
Eli frowned.
Here on Sifar's open areas, it didn't exactly take an ace to handle a high-cover mission. Was Thrawn expecting resistance in the form of enemy airspeeders? He considered asking, decided it would be just as easy to wait and see, and turned his electrobinoculars back on the diggers. They were making good progress. Already the long bags they were dragging behind them were starting to fill up. By the time the stormtroopers arrived, they might well be ready to scurry back across the border.
What's that?
A distant voice whipped faintly across the empty field.
Eli winced. Unless, of course, they spooked and took off sooner. He focused on Tanu. The man was staring up into the night sky, fumbling a civilian set of electrobinoculars from a pouch at his waist. He lifted them up to his eyes.
Set on stun, Thrawn said quietly as he drew his blaster. I will move 100 meters to the right and take up position beside that border mark stone.
Understood,
Eli said. Peering across the ground, he located the rough obelisk at the edge of the field.
You'll stay here, Thrawn continued. I'll deal with the land speeders while you target the raiders. Make certain none of them gets past us.
Understood, Eli said again. 12 against 2,
and all 12 of the raiders had holstered blasters. Briefly, he hoped Thrawn had taken those odds into account.
Do we attack together, or does one of us start?
I'll start, Thrawn said. You'll know when to open fire.
Eli frowned.
I'll know? How will I...
But Thrawn had already slipped out into the darkness. Eli mouthed a silent curse.
Great.
He braced the side of his blaster against the edge of the meeting house doorway, hoping those long-ago Academy weapons classes would come back to him.
It's the Lambda shuttles,
Tanu said anxiously, his voice rising almost to a squeak.
2 of them! Everyone back in the speeders! Come on, come on, come on!
I'll bark it down, someone growled contemptuously. It's probably just that idiot imp bringing in a late buffet dinner or something.
The words were barely out of his mouth when Thrawn opened fire. His first shot burned through the rusty plating of the rearmost of the 3 land speeders, blasting the starboard aft repulsor lift. With a metallic screech, the front of the vehicle pitched up as that corner slammed onto the ground. The nearest raiders jerked as if they'd stepped on a static plate.
Eli clenched his teeth, wondering if this was when he was supposed to make his appearance.
Before he could decide, Thrawn fired again, taking out the same repulsor lift on the vehicle in front of it. That was enough for Tanu. Shrieking something incomprehensible, he dived into the 3rd land speeder, the one closest to him, and tried to spin it around back toward the border. But with the disabled vehicles blocking the path behind him, and with the taller and stiffer stalks on either side resisting his attempts to get through them,
he was having trouble breaking free. He kept trying anyway, battering at the stalks over and over, gaining a few centimeters with each lunge. The rest of the raiders weren't so easily rattled. They sprinted instead toward the disabled vehicles, their long bags dragging and bouncing behind them, yanking out their blasters and firing in the general vicinity of Thrawn's concealment as they ran. Eli tensed. They were in motion, and none of them seemed to be particularly good with their weapons, and all the bolts went wild. The raiders tumbled into cover behind the landspeeders and dropped to their knees, ducking lower as Thrawn shifted to a standard rapid-fire pattern designed to keep an enemy pinned down. The raiders responded by popping their heads up at random and squeezing off return fire. And as both sides settled down for battle, Eli realized that the raiders were now lined up neatly within his field of fire. Even better, pressed against the landspeeders and on their knees. They were not only stationary, but also had limited capacity to move or dodge. Eli smiled tightly. Thrawn had been right. He did know when to fire. Lining up his blaster on the first pair, he squeezed the trigger. The stun setting had a wider effective range than standard blaster fire, permitting each shot to take down two of the raiders. With their attention on Thrawn and his louder, more dangerous fire, the conspirators lost six of their number to Eli's attack before the rest suddenly woke up to the new threat. Instantly, they shifted their fire toward the meeting house, forcing Eli to throw himself sideways to avoid getting hit. He slammed onto the ground on his left shoulder, jarring his whole body and momentarily throwing off his aim. It was, in retrospect, the wrong move. Up to that point, his position had been somewhat obscure. Now he was out in the open. Shots hammered the meeting house and the ground around him as he scuttled as quickly as he could on elbows and knees toward another border stone to the meeting house's left. 5 meters into his mad scramble, he belatedly realized he probably should have gone the other way, past the raiders' defense line, and tried instead to reach Thrawn. There, the two of them could have worked in unison to hold off their opponents until the reinforcements arrived from the Thunder Wasp. Too late for that now. Swearing under his breath, Eli kept going, wincing with each shot that burned through the air or sizzled into the ground nearby. And then suddenly, all was silence. Cautiously, Eli wobbled to a halt. Still silence. Even more cautiously, he lifted his head. The men and women who'd been shooting at him were sprawled on the ground beside the landspeeders. Standing over them, his blaster trained on the still-trapped Tanu, was Thrawn. Feeling like a fool, Eli stood up, brushed himself off as best he could, and walked over to his commander.
"Well done, Ensign," Thrawn said, his eyes and blaster still pointed at Tanu.
Tanu, for his part, had abandoned his attempts to escape and was leaning resignedly over his landspeeder's steering wheel.
"Are you injured?"
"No, sir,"
Eli said, feeling his face warming.
"Well done?"
"Not even close."
"Sorry, sir."
Thrawn spared him a quick look.
"Why are you sorry? You executed your part perfectly."
"But I didn't get them all,"
Eli pointed out.
"And when they fired at me, I went the wrong direction."
"I did not expect you to defeat them all," Thrawn assured him. "And your decision to draw their fire away from me was what enabled me to move unnoticed to a position where I could bring a final end to their resistance."
"Oh,"
Eli said lamely, torn between the reflexive desire to tell Thrawn that it hadn't been a decision at all, and the equally reflexive reluctance not to argue with his commanding officer when he was being complimented. Thrawn didn't give him time to resolve either part of the quandary.
"Come," he said. "I expect Mr. Tanu is ready to talk."
Mr. Tanu was.
"It wasn't my idea,"
he groaned, still draped across the steering wheel.
"It was Pulsary. She's the one who came up with it."
"Yet you were the one who refined the pre-spice for smuggling," Thrawn said. "Having learned the technique from your brother,
They forced me, he moaned. I didn't want to, but they forced me.
The technique is quite interesting,
Thrawn went on, as if Tanu hadn't spoken.
A small change in the formulation results in a product that appears to be Skarn, but with the effects drastically diminished. A man who is being forced to work against his will could easily sabotage their efforts and desires. Yet you did not.
Tanu raised himself from the steering wheel, and even in the darkness, Eli could see the disgust in his face. He didn't like being caught, and he especially didn't like being caught by an alien.
You're a clever little imp, aren't you? Fine, you caught us. Now what?
You will be turned over to a court for trial.
And what are you going to charge us all with?
Possession of an illegal substance,
Thrawn said.
Assault on Aith villages and their inhabitants.
I don't think so,
Tanu said.
See, there aren't any raids going tonight. Pulsary didn't trust you not to put some stormtroopers on guard. So that's off the list, and possession of pre-spice isn't illegal.
Really?
Thrawn said.
Engine?
Eli already had his data pad out. A quick search. Damn it.
He's right, sir, he said. Pre-spice isn't an illegal substance. There are too many other products it can be turned into that are perfectly safe and legal.
But the product you have created is illegal,
Thrawn pointed out.
Maybe,
Tanu said.
But you'll never prove it. See, that's what the others are doing tonight instead of poking at the safari. They're hiding all our product where no one will ever find it.
Perhaps.
Thrawn reached into the landspeeder and plucked the sensor from Tanu's belt.
Perhaps not.
Tanu barked a laugh.
If you think you're going to search the Enclave looking for our supply, you can forget it. That thing's range is only 20 meters, and it only registers pre-spice anyway. Face it, you've got nothing.
On the contrary, I have all I need,
Thrawn said calmly.
20 meters will be quite sufficient. One final question. Which of your group brought in Night Swan to advise you?
Tanu's eyes narrowed.
How did you know about him?
Answer my question.
Tanu pursed his lips.
It was Scath,
he said.
She knew someone who knew him and thought he could help.
And so he did, Thrawn said. But not enough. His end will come. Yours has now arrived.
And with perfect timing, the two shuttles and their three accompanying TIEs swooped past overhead. The shuttles curved around and angled toward the ground near Thrawn. The starfighters rising again into low cover and high cover formations. 10 minutes later, the unconscious conspirators were aboard the first shuttle, binders firmly locked around their wrists and ankles. Eli used that time to check the landspeeders, hoping for contraband or something else that could be used against them in court. But aside from the material in the collection bags, there was nothing. Unless there was some tweak in local law that made possession of pre-spice illegal, and if the others really had stayed home instead of raiding across the border, then Thrawn might very well have nothing.
All secured, sir, the stormtrooper commander reported as Tanu trudged up the shuttle ramp under the blasters of a pair of watchful guards and disappeared inside. Orders?
Take the prisoners back to the Enclave by way of the Aith villages I have marked,
Thrawn said, handing him a data card.
If you see any fighting there, you are to intervene on the side of the Aiths. Do your best to take the human attackers alive, but you are free to use deadly force if you deem it necessary.
Yes, sir, the commander said. Do you want the other shuttle left here?
It will accompany you, Thrawn said. There will be more prisoners before the night is over, either in the villages or in the Enclave. I will keep Lieutenant Gim. You will take the other two ties as escort.
Yes, sir. Stiffening briefly to attention, he strode toward the shuttles, giving orders as he went. A few minutes later, the shuttles were back in the sky, the ties flying in flanking formation.
And now we end this, Thrawn said, fingering the sensor he'd taken from Tanu. Come.
Lieutenant Gim was waiting by his tie, coming to attention as Thrawn and Eli neared him.
I'm told you need some fancy flying, Commander, he said.
Indeed, Thrawn confirmed. Running through the ground below our feet is a vein of material that is a precursor to a spice variety called Skarn.
The pilot stiffened a little further.
Yes, sir, he said,
his voice darkening.
I've heard of it.
This sensor will show its presence, Thrawn continued. It does, however, have only a minimal range, 20 meters or less, which will require ground-level flight. The vein itself almost certainly does not run straight, but twists and turns along its length. Do you think you can follow it?
May I see the sensor?
Thrawn handed it over. The pilot peered at it, waved it back and forth around him, then nodded.
Yes, sir, I can, he said. May I suggest I also take a little gunnery practice as I fly over it?
Your enthusiasm is noted and appreciated, Lieutenant, Thrawn said. But I am told that pre-spice runs deep in places, and I understand that a certain degree of heat is part of the refining process. We do not wish to accidentally turn it into the final deadly product.
No, sir,
the pilot said.
If you just want it mapped, I can do that.
We will hardly be simply mapping, Lieutenant,
Thrawn assured him, pulling out his comlink.
As you said, gunnery practice. Lieutenant Commander Osgood, this is Commander Thrawn. I have an interesting challenge for you.
It was, Eli would afterward decide, the most insane military operation he'd ever seen or even heard of. But it worked. It was spectacular enough from the ground. It was probably even more so from low orbit. Gim flew his TIE fighter low over the cropland, nearly brushing the tops of the stalks at times, then continued on over grazing lands, marshes, and more cropland. He flew in gentle curves or dizzying zigzags, wherever the trail led him, always following the line of pre-spice lurking beneath the soil. And following along 50 meters behind him was a blazing wave of ground-shattering flame as the cleansing fire from the Thunder Wasp's turbo lasers carved out the same path, their focal point precisely matching the TIE's maneuvers and burning the pre-spice into oblivion. By morning, as Thrawn had predicted, it was over.
What do you do?
Joko demanded.
His voice shakes.
Do you attack our sovereign land at will?
I have destroyed the source of the conspirators' profits, Thrawn said.
Did the chief truly not see the pattern nor understand the result?
With the pre-spice gone, they have no further incentive to seek control over Aif land.
You attacked us!
Joko repeated.
You destroyed farmland and damaged homes and water springs!
If I had not destroyed all the pre-spice, the attacks would have continued.
The Empire would have given us justice without destruction!
Without the destruction, the justice would have been temporary, Thrawn said. The value was too great to be ignored. The thieves would have come back. When they did, you would have lost more than just farmland.
What more? Orchards? Bridges?
Lives.
For a few seconds, Joko gazed at him in silence. But the silence was stiff, and there was bitterness beneath it.
I see your concern for my people,
he said at last.
But their lives and lands could have been protected in a different way, a better way.
You may appeal my actions to Coruscant, Thrawn said. They may repudiate them.
Yet the damage will remain. I will appeal your actions, and I will pray we never meet again.
Vanto was waiting when Thrawn emerged from the shuttle.
Ensign Vanto, Thrawn said. Has Coruscant responded to my report?
Yes, sir,
Vanto said, his voice dark with contempt. I'm afraid they're not happy with you.
No doubt their unhappiness will expand when Chief Joko delivers his own reaction.
Fine,
Vanto said with a resigned sigh.
They're not just not happy, they're furious.
As expected.
Which is insane,
Vanto said, his anger appearing through his decorum.
You ended the conflict. You exposed a criminal conspiracy, and you kept a deep vein's worth of spice off the market. What more do they want?
They want a commander who follows procedures, Thrawn said. They want a commander who will ask their advice.
And their permission?
Perhaps, Thrawn said. I have found that many admirals aspire to that rank because of a wish to exercise control and authority. Such leaders are threatened if officers of lower rank solve difficult problems without them.
And of course, there's always politics lurking around the corner.
Vanto eyed him thoughtfully.
What about you, Commander? Why do you seek high rank?
It was a question many had asked over the years. Thrawn had asked it of himself. The answer never seemed to satisfy the questioner.
Because there are problems that must be solved. Some cannot be solved by anyone except me.
I see.
Vanto was silent a moment.
Senior Lieutenant Hammerly was able to stall them for a bit by telling them you were consulting with the local chief, but they expect you to call back.
Of course, Thrawn said. I will do so immediately.
What will you tell them?
The truth.
Vanto had now asked the question. He was no more satisfied than anyone who had come before him. Thrawn wondered if anyone would ever be satisfied, or would ever truly understand.
The truth. Eli scowled the words to himself as he strode down the Thunder Wasp's central corridor toward his quarters.
The truth. When did that ever gain anyone anything? Thrawn had been telling the truth pretty much since he'd arrived in Imperial space. Yet he was continually getting hauled back to Coruscant to explain himself before increasingly hostile officers' boards. It was only through the intervention and good graces of people like Colonel Ularin that he was still even in the Navy, let alone commanding his own ship.
The truth.
No. Truth never gained anyone anything. All it did was anger those who preferred lies and confusion and backspinning in the hope of making themselves look better. As far as Eli had been able to tell, that was pretty much everyone. Ahead, the door to the starfighter hangar slid open, and Lieutenant Gim stepped out.
Lieutenant,
Eli greeted him.
Excellent flying down there.
Thank you,
Gim said, an odd expression on his face.
I'm glad I ran into you.
You have a question, sir?
Gim's lip twisted in an ironic smile.
You don't remember me, do you?
Eli frowned, studying his face. He couldn't place it.
No, sir,
he admitted.
Should I?
I would have thought so,
Gim said with a casual shrug.
Of course, it was pretty dark at the time, and you probably had other things on your mind.
Eli caught his breath as it suddenly clicked. You were one of the cadets who attacked Commander Thrawn.
I categorically deny that, of course, Kim lowered his eyes pointedly to Eli's insignia plaque.
And you're still an ensign.
An ensign in service to the best commander in the Navy,
Eli countered stiffly.
Maybe,
Kim said.
Though from what I hear, whether he stays a commander is somewhat up in the air.
We'll see,
Eli said.
What do you want?
Nothing, really,
Kim said.
I just wanted you to know that despite what I'm sure were Commander Thrawn's best efforts, I wasn't tossed out of the Academy. In fact, things worked out very well for me. Commandant Deanlark was able to pull enough strings to get the three of us transferred to starfighter training at Skystrike Academy.
Really?
Eli said.
Commandant Deanlark did that, did he?
Kim's forehead wrinkled just for a moment, but then it cleared.
Oh, I see. You think my family were the ones who pulled the strings?
He shrugged.
Doesn't matter, really. As long as strings were pulled by someone. But don't take it too hard, Ensign. Getting to be a commander even this long is pretty impressive for an unknown region's alien. If he ends up back as a lieutenant in charge of droid repair, well, he'll still have his memories.
I'm sure he'll have more than that,
Eli said. Kim raised his eyebrows.
I'm sure he'll have more than that, sir,
he corrected. With a supreme effort, Eli stifled the sudden urge to punch Kim across the corridor.
I'm sure he'll have more than that, sir.
Better,
Kim said.
I think I'll go have a drink with the real officers now. Good night, Ensign.
He turned and strode off down the passageway. Eli watched him, an unpleasant mix of emotions swirling inside him. Thrawn had been right. The man had become an outstanding starfighter pilot. Only he would probably never know who he had to thank for that. In fact, he'd likely go to his grave thinking that he'd put one over on the poor, dumb alien. With a sigh, Eli continued on toward his quarters, wondering if anyone, anywhere, really cared about truth.